What is the main content of the prayer? Look at Revelation 6, and in verse 10, I think we see, "And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, wilt thou refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell," there's our word again, "dwell on the earth." It appears that the content of the prayers given by these individuals, the content of the prayers being offered up before God, is not one for the well-being of the inhabitants of the earth. It is a prayer rather asking for judgment on those that dwell on the earth. And what happens is a response to those prayers for judgment. Because verse 5 gives us the response. Revelation 8:5, "And the angel took the censer," this fire pan he has, it's all filled with hot coals, "and he threw it to the earth." So the angel turns and throws these blazing hot coals down on the earth in response to the prayers of the saints for judgment on those that dwell on the earth. And the result of these hot coals being cast toward the earth is peals of thunder and sounds and flashes of lightning and an earthquake. So after 30 minutes of silence, suddenly we have hot coals being cast to the earth that begin this time of judgment. This activity by the angel, the casting of coals down to the earth in response to these prayers, also teaches us another very important lesson. And that is, it teaches us the twofold aspect of judgment. In chapter 8, verse 5, we see coals of the altar cast to the earth and all of these various phenomena occurring, which will begin the blowing of the trumpets, bringing about judgment on the earth. And without doubt, now, the reason for these coals in verse 5 is for punitive judgment. There's no question that what God wants to do here is punish the inhabitants of the earth, those that dwell on the earth, those that have their roots in things on the earth. This is punitive judgment. The coals are cast and thunder and lightning breaks out and the trumpets are going to begin to blow and all kinds of things take place to bring punishment on those that dwell on the earth. And you can write a marginal note there, Romans 1:18. That the wrath of God is revealed from heaven on these ungodly men. To get the impact of what's taking place, I need to read all of these verses in succession. And I'll begin in verse 6 and read right through verse 13. Because we need to sense now the rapid movement going on in the balance of these verses. "And the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound them. And the first sounded, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the earth was burnt up, and a third of the trees were burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. And the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. And a third of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. It fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of waters, and the name of the star is called Wormwood. And a third of the waters became wormwood, and many died from the waters, because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars were smitten, so that a third of them might be darkened, and the day might not shine for a third of it. And the night in the same way. And I looked, and I heard an eagle flying in the mid-heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet and the three angels who are about to sound." The first trumpet blows back here in verse 7. And what begins to take place reminds us of what happened in the plagues on Egypt. Go back. Look back in Revelation 6, verse 8, and let's look at and recall what has taken place just prior to this trumpet sound, just probably a few months, and may still be going on. "And I looked, and behold, an ashen horse, and he who sat on it had the name Death, and Hades was following with him. And authority was given to them over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, and with famine, and with pestilence, and by the wild beasts of the earth. Just prior to this, and maybe even still going on, because this is warfare going on, there will be 1 billion people slain. 1/4 of the earth's population, which now stands at about 4 billion. So when this seal is released back here, 1 billion people are going to be slain through this warfare that's going on. Now, where does rain come from? Doesn't it not come from the evaporation of lakes, rivers, and oceans? Historians have recorded that during some of the Roman battles and the Roman slaughters, blood ran so deep in the streets that it would extinguish small fires which were burning in the streets. There were so many people slashed open and killed that the blood ran deep enough to put out small fires. That's a lot of blood. But now I wonder how much blood is going to be around if 1 billion people are slaughtered. So it just may be that through some kind of evaporation process along with the water and moisture, who knows, maybe blood is picked up and mixed in the heavens and it rains back down with this hail and fire coming down in this kind of, anyway, whatever it is, it's an awesome and grisly, terrible thing that takes place because of the devastation and the stench and everything else that goes on with this. Now, the second trumpet introduces something else to us. Now, I want you to look at the words for this second trumpet in verse 8. And the second angel sounded. Now, look at our language here. He doesn't say a great mountain is thrown in the sea. But he says something like a great mountain, or as the King James says, I think, as it were a great mountain. So this is not a mountain, but John looks at it, and because of the size of it, he's groping for a word that fits. And he says, well, this thing is so big, it's like a big mountain being thrown into the sea. Now, we don't know what it is. It could be several things. Maybe it could be some gigantic volcano that blows its top, and this thing falls. That's possible. It could be a giant meteor, and I believe it probably is. And during its orbital flight and descent into the earth, the devastation is just overwhelming. And it strikes the earth, and look what happens. A third of the sea became blood. A third of its creatures, which had life, died. And a third of the ships were destroyed. Evidently, tidal waves are caused. And if it falls in the Pacific, then all of these vessels on the European coast are smashed, and on the eastern seaboard are smashed. If it falls, or in the Atlantic, if it falls in the Pacific, then all those ships in the Orient are smashed, and on the western seaboard are smashed. By best estimates, there are probably about 45 to 48,000 merchant ships in the world, and between 3 and 4,000 large naval vessels currently in the world, which would put the world's seagoing force at about 50 to 52,000 vessels of any consequence. So 1/3 of those will be destroyed, 15, 16, 17,000 ships. And just on the naval vessels alone, they figure there are probably 1.5 million sailors around the world on all these different vessels, which means 500,000 sailors will be killed, plus all the merchant vessels. So it's going to be a tremendous devastation that takes place when this giant meteor, or whatever it is, falls into the sea. Fish are going to die. Everything is going to die. Then this third object now is introduced by the third angel and the third trumpet in verse 10. And the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven. Now, it doesn't say it's a torch, does it? But it's burning like a torch. That's the closest thing John could think of. Something, what burns, John has to think, what's the brightest burning thing I can think of? He said, well, it's like a torch, a big flaming torch. And this object is falling from the sky, burning like a giant torch. And that's how he describes it. It could possibly be a comet, a burning ball of fire coming in from outer space that is not burned up by the atmosphere, but strikes the earth. I tend to believe it is probably some kind of a huge missile burning as it comes down, and we're going to have a lot of atomic activity and nuclear fission going on, and that's what John sees, very possibly, at this stage with this activity. But whatever it is, whether it's some kind of thermonuclear device or some kind of a comet surrounded by poisonous gases, whatever it is, it falls here into the sea. It fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water, verse 11, and the name of the star is called Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the waters because they were bitter. Now, in atomic war, what do you not want to do? You do not want to drink the water. And here we have this nuclear activity, evidently. The waters now become poisoned by what may be atomic activity, radioactive fallout, and because men are trying to drink this water that's been poisoned by this atomic activity, they're dying from the poisoned water. On the other hand, it could be anything. It could be nerve gas. If you remember, on March 13, 1967, over Skull Valley, Utah, an Air Force plane discharged 320 gallons of nerve gas over a target area. But he missed and he fouled up. But because of a wind change, only 5%, they estimate, of that nerve gas drifted into an area where there were livestock, which would be somewhere about 16 gallons of this nerve gas vaporized in the air. And when it hit in Skull Valley, Utah, 6,400 sheep died by a little foul-up by that Air Force pilot, which is 16 gallons of vaporized nerve gas. But that awakened everyone to the possibility of biological warfare. And now we know that the Russians, and of course I suppose we do as well, have different kinds of organisms and nerve gas compounds, and the results of these things are just staggering. So whatever it is going to poison the water such that the people that try to drink it die. And the earth, of course, is just devastated because of this. The word wormwood comes from the Greek word absinthos, from which we get our word absinthe. And it simply means bitter. In the Old Testament, had an intoxicating effect. And in verse 12, when the fourth angel sounds, there seems to be some activity here in heaven. No one has a good explanation of this. It can only be one of several things. Either when this fourth angel sounds, what we see is from an earthly perspective, and the atmosphere is so filled with ash and fallout that the sun and moon and stars are only visible maybe at the points of time when they're at the apex. Other than that, when they get down into the horizon, there's so much ash and fallout, you can't see it. So from an earthly perspective, it looks as if a third of the sun and a third of the stars, a third of the moon, just seems to be darkened because you can't see it. On the other hand, depends how big your God is, you know. God is the one that names the stars by name. He spoke them into existence. And it just may be that as a result of this fourth angel, that God causes this fission activity in these burning stars and in the sun to diminish for some given part of the day, and the moon cannot reflect and the sun does not give its light, and God actually causes this physical phenomena of light reduction to occur in these heavenly bodies. That's possible as well, either one. So finally, now in verse 13, John sees something rather unusual. And I want to pause here just for a moment to say that there is a discrepancy here in the manuscripts, and it depends which Bible you have, what the Bible is going to say. Verse 13, if you have a King James or a translation from the Received Text, it will say, "And I looked, and I heard an angel flying in mid-heaven." How many of you have a Bible that says angel? Okay, if you have a New American Standard or a translation from the Critical Text, it will say, "And I looked and I heard an eagle flying in mid-heaven." How many of you have a Bible that says eagle? There's a big difference between an eagle and an angel. So in this, I prefer the Textus Receptus, or the Received Text, King James translation of angel. I think an eagle is completely out of context here because this being has intelligence, it's speaking, and I don't really see any place for an eagle to be flying around here because all we've had so far is mention of angels and angelic activity. Now, the only way to possibly reconcile this is back in Revelation chapter 4 and look at verse 7. And the first creature was like a lion, the second creature like a calf, the third creature had a face like a man, and the fourth creature, this flying angel, was like a what? A flying eagle. So the only way to reconcile these two may be that what John sees here flying and giving these woes is in fact one of these four creatures, the one that looks like an eagle. And so maybe there's a dual meaning there. If you look, it's got the face of an eagle, it's an eagle. Really, it's an angel. It's a creature, one of these beings created by God. In any case, the summation seems to be here in chapter 8, verse 13. Woe, woe, woe. In other words, to put it very bluntly, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's kind of what this eagle slash angel is saying to those who dwell on the earth. And there's our word again. And remember, this all started back in Revelation 3:10, didn't it? Because in Revelation 3:10, Christ speaking, because you have kept the word of my perseverance, I will keep you from the hour of testing, that tribulation period, that hour which is about to come upon the whole world to test those who dwell upon the earth. So over and over again, we have use of that very strong Greek word. And these individuals are spiritually dead. So when the angel speaks of these woes coming, the woes are coming to those who dwell on the earth. They put their roots down. This is the only hope they have. They think they can take it with them. If they can't, they're going to leave memorials behind them. And it is upon these people that these woes will come. Because even during the tribulation, we're going to discover there will still be two categories of people, really three categories. There will be the 144,000 we've already seen back in Revelation 7 who are sealed. There will be those individuals who have responded to the evangelistic witness of the 144,000. They will be born-again believers. They will not be among those who dwell on the earth. Then there will be those who have not responded to that message of the 144,000. They will be those who dwell on the earth. And it is upon those who dwell on the earth that these woes, as produced by these three remaining angels, including the vile judgments, will fall. Chapter 9 is put there by the author, by the editor of the Bible. You can just take a pen and write right through that chapter 9, because what we have here is an ongoing narrative that John is giving. And after he looks at the fourth angel in verse 12 and sees the angel flying in verse 13, he goes on immediately in verse 1, chapter 9, to say, and the fifth angel sounded. So there really is no break there, other than these last three angels that sound are classified by the three woes indicated by the angel in chapter 8, verse 13. So you see, by the time the seventh trumpet sounds, the tribulation is almost at an end, and God is about ready to set up the kingdom of Christ on the earth. And then the chapters that follow, and even inclusive of 10 and 11, 10 through 15 are going to be parenthetic. And then, of course, 16 will be the vials, 17 and 18, the Babylons, and then Christ returns in 19. So really, by the time we get down through trumpet number 6, and especially by the time trumpet 7 blows, chronologically, we've covered almost the entire tribulation period. The materials that we'll cover in 10 through 15 will just be fill-in parenthetical materials of things that are going on during that time. So with that in mind, once again, there is a specific event that affects our study today, which John has as parenthetic, and that is in Revelation chapter 12. So I need you to turn to Revelation 12 now. And again, remember that as we get into Revelation 12, we're in that parenthetical section, which is taking place during or just prior to, really, the opening of the seventh seal and the trumpet judgments that follow. I want to read now in Revelation 12. I'll read verse 3. And another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his heads were seven diadems. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven, and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth. Now I want to go on down to verse 7. And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. And the dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. When we think of Satan and his original fall, we usually think of the casting out of Satan, the casting out of Satan as a single event. Actually, Satan is going to have four castings, not just one single casting, which has taken place in the past. By the time God's program is completed, Satan will have been cast four times. What do we read in Revelation 9:1? Satan is given a key so that he is going to have access to the shaft of the abyss, so that for the first time in history, these evil, malicious, fallen angels, demon spirits, are going to be freed so that they can roam upon the earth for a limited amount of time. And his fury and wrath is going to really be vented during the Great Tribulation, that last 3.5-year period. And he gets the opportunity to do just that beginning here in Revelation chapter 9. Keeping in mind that Revelation 9:1 takes place after the midpoint of the tribulation, that this casting out, as recorded here in Revelation chapter 12, when he's cast from the heavenly realm down to earth to physically occupy earth, takes place at the midpoint of the tribulation period. So what John does for us here in Revelation 9 is give us this little parenthetical section. And the fifth angel sounded, I saw a star from heaven which had fallen. He's referring back to that midpoint. Satan's already fallen to the earth at the midpoint of the tribulation period. And the key of the bottomless pit was given to him. And now, for the first time in history, Satan gets the opportunity to really vent his wrath on mankind. And we can see how much he hates men in this section. Because once he gets this key from Christ, he wastes no time at all in using it. Look at verses 2 and 3. And he, that is this fallen star, Lucifer, opened the bottomless pit. And smoke went up out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the pit. And out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth, and power was given them as the scorpions of the earth have power. What a horrible place this must be. Look at this description that John has to give us in this chapter. Smoke ascends, smoke from brimstone. This place has been shut up for thousands of years. Evidently, it's a real place. It's like a great furnace, and where there's smoke, there must be fire. There is so much smoke that the sun is darkened by the smoke. And then as this abyss, the shaft of the abyss, belches forth this smoke of brimstone, out of the smoke we see these horrible demonic creatures in the form of locusts, but they are in no way like locusts with which we are familiar, because these locusts have stings like scorpions. These locust-like demonic creatures have scorpion-like stings. I mean, it's bad news to be stung by one scorpion, but we're going to see even more activity than that going on in this chapter. But an unusual command is given to these demonic locusts with the scorpion-like stings, because they have intelligence. Look in verse 4. They were told that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only the men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. So you see, this isn't like any kind of locust with which we're familiar. They have intelligence. They have a leader that gives them the command regarding the earth and the trees and the grass. Don't stay away from that. Locusts go after crops. So these aren't locusts as we know them. These locusts go after men. They don't gnaw on the grass. They gnaw and sting on men. And they gnaw and sting on this particular kind of human being. That is, the one who does not have the seal of God on his forehead. And they sting with their scorpion tails. And as you see, their sting and torment is restricted to the ones who do not have the seal of God. Now look back, if you will, to chapter 8, verse 13. John's saying, and I looked and I heard, and here's our verse here, an eagle slash angel, or one of the creatures, flying in mid-heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 and he's talking about the three trumpets which have yet to blow. Woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. And you see, there's our word again, isn't it? Those who dwell on the earth. And we first picked that up way back in Revelation 3. It's interesting about how people have interpreted this chapter. One of the famous Roman Catholic scholars and commentators is Benelli. And he said that the locusts here in this chapter are the Lutherans. And then, of course, there are those who say, well, these locusts must be the Mohammedans because of the way the Mohammedans treated the Christians. Well, the Mohammedans like to do a little more than torment. They like to cut your head off. And we see later that these are not given the power of death, just the power to torment. So those are some of the real interpretations that have been given to this passage of Scripture through the years. But I think really what we have here are real demonic creatures freed from this shaft of the abyss by the fallen cherub Lucifer. And now he has the opportunity to torment men with his demon creatures that have the scorpion-like stings. But they are not allowed to harm the 144,000 who have the seal of God in their foreheads and the other believers who are also sealed by God. Because back in verse 13, we saw that the woes are only for those that dwell on the earth. The unbelievers have their roots down. Let's go to verse 5. And they were not permitted to kill anyone but to torment for 5 months. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it stings a man. In those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will long to die and death flees from them. I think this 5 months is probably a literal 5 month period. And scholars have searched and searched, but there's no real reason why the word 5 months. We have no reason to know why 5 months. Maybe some farmers would know. Some say that the typical time of a locust invasion is 5 months. I don't know if that's true or not when it does happen. But this is a 5 month period that these demonic forces are allowed to torment men. In fact, the torment is going to be so bad. Have you ever hurt so bad you just wanted to die? Say, oh, I just wish I could die. This is so terrible. Well, this is what it's going to be like in this time. These locust-like demonic creatures, and we'll look at their descriptions in a minute, are going to swarm over men and sting with these scorpion-like tails to such an extent that those who dwell on the earth are just going to want to die. The pain and agony is going to be so great. But look what it says. They will long to die, and death is going to flee from them. A lot of positions have been held on this. I think Van Gorder is one I read many years ago. He said, you'll jump in the water, I want to drown yourself, and you'll bob to the top. You won't be able to drown. And you want to shoot yourself in the head, and the gun won't go off. Now, I don't think that's what's going to happen. That's possible. But I think what we have here is the possession of mankind by demonic forces. You see, demon possession controls many activities in a person's life.
This concludes number 12.